Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
First of all, Happy New Year. This is our first show of 2024. Amen, amen. Yeah, happy New Year to everybody. We had some glitches, but we made it work.
Right.
But without further ado, you know, it's amazing and it's an honor that I introduce you to one of the pioneers that was instrumental for blacks into the sports of lacrosse. It's truly amazing how many awards and achievements was made that I cannot begin to share about Professor Coach Lloyd Carter. Historically, his team of young men went on to college and excelled in the sport of lacrosse and won numerous awards in their division. So, you know, it was so much I could say about him, I would need to do a TV show. So, since I don't own a TV show, I can do what I can do on the radio. Say, how you doing, Lloyd Carter?
How you doing, Big Sis?
I'm doing great.
This is a blessing. It's a blessing. Happy New Year to you and your co-host. And
as always,
God bless you. God bless you for giving me this opportunity.
Well, you know, the opportunity is welcome and needed because it's a lot, you know, especially with February right around the corner, Black History Month. You know, I think it's more appropriate. So
right.
We start with some history that people weren't aware of. But one thing people do know, they do know they haven't seen, you know, blacks doing lacrosse because, you know, when I went to high school, so they said, I ain't carrying no stick with no basket doing that crazy stuff. And so that was nothing that we was never really known for, you know. But now, you know, like we wasn't really known for golf back in the day. But now we doing it in all divisions. And because of you, man, you took these young guys from the street, man. You gave them another way to do something and excel and, you know, man, y'all did the thing. So give somebody a little background about what made you go from just hanging out and growing up to doing the lacrosse thing.
Okay, I was born in Baltimore. I always tell people I was born in the projects in Baltimore, not the high rise, but McCullough projects, without the low rise.
Ooh,
I always try to give people a point of reference if they've ever seen the movie or the TV show The Wire. When you see them selling drugs in the low-rise projects, those projects actually exist, and that's where I was raised up in. Call it the McCullough Projects. We then moved on up. We moved to Edmondson Village, which is in West Baltimore, and when we did that, we moved into a neighborhood that was somewhat integrated, and the high school was integrated, and they played lacrosse. And my oldest brother, Bennett Carter, we call him Bunky, God rest his soul. He was nine years older than me, and he started playing the game, and he would bring the lacrosse stick home. At that point, it was wooden sticks. He would bring the stick home. And I would play with it in the house in the front of the yard, and it was kind of interesting. Everybody in, like, my four-block radius in our neighborhood played the sport. And so we were pretty good. So by the time we got to high school, which was Edmondson High School, which is a historically black high school that plays lacrosse, very prominent, we played. We were very good. And then from that point, I got a scholarship to play at Morgan State University, which was the first HBCU in history to have a lacrosse program. And so that is a short synopsis of how I got there. I played at Morgan for 3 years. In 1981, which was my junior year, Morgan defunded the program. And I always like to add this last tidbit. In 1981, we were ranked third in the nation. We had beaten Georgetown. We had beaten Michigan State. We had beaten Villanova. And our most prominent win, we had beaten Notre Dame. And I always tell people, we beat Morgan State, beat Notre Dame in lacrosse. I always joke. I say not in basketball. You say, well, yeah, maybe not in football. And then I really joke. I say, not in spades, in lacrosse. And so we beat supposedly, you know, the prominent Anglo-American university in the sport, which is was often considered a white sport, but it's really not. It's the Native Americans created the sport. So that's a quick summary of some of my playing experience, how I got to that point. And if you want to take it further, we can.
We will, but you know, Sam, I'm glad you said that it wasn't a white sport, because I'm ignorant to this point. I didn't know that it was a Native American sport. And I guess most people probably, a lot of people think like I thought, they thought it was a white sport. When I was coming up, I thought it was just the white people playing it, you know, because I didn't see blacks doing it. But to know there was an Indian, a Native American sport, that's even amazing, especially because I got American lineage, you know, I'm part Cherokee. So, wow, that's good to know. So when that, I'm going to let Chris have his question at you.
Yes, Lloyd, my first question is, when you became a lacrosse coach, did you have an earthling or an inkling that you'd make in history, or was you completely surprised by it?
Well, my lacrosse coach experience came about because, like I said, I was hanging out with my brother, and we were just hanging out down in the harbor in Baltimore, and we ran across a guy that my brother played high school lacrosse with, and he said that this high school, Northwestern, was looking for a lacrosse coach. And the athletic director, his name was Wayne Jackson. So we knew Wayne Jackson because Wayne Jackson had played at Edmonton, and he had gone to Morgan, and he was like one of the best players at Morgan. He was like a three-time All-American. So he gave me the job to coach at Northwestern. Now, if you're not familiar with Baltimore, Northwestern is in the area called Park Heights. And I'm sure Terry is very familiar with Park Heights. I always tell people that, give me three Park Heights guys, and I can go anywhere in the world, and I'll be okay. I can go to the Bronx, I can go to Brooklyn, I can go to South. Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about.
So I coached
at Northwestern for 13 years. But what happened was, and I'll tell you this real quick, in my third year of coaching high school, I met this gentleman named Sean Medlin, who eventually became one of the best players in the country. And as a result of my relationship with Sean Medlin, we started the organization called Black Slacks, our logo being Sticks in the Hood. And our goal with the organization was to give African-Americans a great opportunity of playing the sport, which would then lead them to college or just a better life. One of the other slogans we have is on the field and off the corner. That's how my high school coaching and the Black Lacks, but the college thing was just God. God was all over the Hampton program. Me becoming a Division I coach, that was nothing but God's wisdom and guidance for that.
I want you to share that story about that young man that passed away and his mother.
Yeah.
Share that story.
All right, I'll share the story. So if anybody wants to see the story, they can. All they have to do is Google Mother of Hampton Lacrosse. It'll come up. ESPN did a special about that phenomenon, and it's called Mother of Hampton Lacrosse. And what they did, they documented how that the first Division I program of HBCU came about. The story real quickly came about because it was a gentleman named Michael Crawford. He grew up in the Bronx, and he went to Hampton University. He was in his senior year, and growing up in Brooklyn, he had played lacrosse all his life, and he wanted to create a program at Hampton. He had wrote up a proposal, and all of this he talked about in the documentary, and he shared it with his mother. In his senior year, he went home on his winter break. He went up to his room, and he never came down. He died. And as a result of that, when his mother found him, obviously she grieved, and after she was going through the grieving process, she found the paperwork, and she wanted to keep his dream alive. So what she did is she got in touch with the university. She actually then moved her and her husband. She moved to Newport News, Virginia, for a year to help get the program started. But before she moved, she Googled Black lacrosse coach. She said, I want to see if there was a coach that would be interested in starting this program. As a result of that, what happened was she called me. She called me on the phone. I was at work. I was working for the fire department at the time. And because I was working at the fire department, I saw the call, and what I was able to do is when I got to my office, I called her, and I said, this is Chief Carter. Can I help you? And then she went through the story of telling me what happened to her son. Well, halfway through the conversation, she was in tears. I was in tears.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I cut her off. And this is well documented in the documentary. I cut her off. I said, Miss Crawford, I said, you believe in God? She said, yes. And I said, well, God had you call the right person. And I'm able at this point, after a while, to say it without getting emotional. I kind of say it very matter-of-fact, because if I actually thought about it, I would lose it, because that's how powerful that moment was. So what I used to do, I used to drive from Baltimore to Hampton University every weekend for almost 2 years to start the club team. That was in 2011. Then I relocated to Newport News in 2013, and then in 2016, we went on and became a Division I lacrosse program, the first HBCU in the history, and that's why ESPN did the documentary. So that's the story.
Wow, that's a phenomenal story, you know, and it's amazing that, you know, God put you where you was at to have the passion to lead the team. You know, as y'all was getting started, did y'all have sponsorship? How was y'all making the funds to go here and there?
Well, I would say this about Hampton. One, they had the foresight to create the program, the first one in history, but they were frugal. You know, I learned how
to.
I wouldn't say that. I had to educate them. They didn't understand the financial dynamics it takes to run a lacrosse program. You know, and during the process, I educated them. So they funded it, but initially the money wasn't what they thought it was. I had to explain to them, hey, look, you're starting a program from scratch. And once they understood, they funded it, and yeah, we had great uniforms, great equipment, travel was great, hotel accommodations. Yeah, once I had to educate them on the importance of it. So, and the program's still going now. They're on there.
Because that was winning.
Well, we started our first season, we didn't win any games. The second season, we won one game. And then my third season, we ended up a little under 500. And then my final season, we had a winning record. And I was like, man, let me leave while I'm on top.
So,
yeah.
That's a good thing to do.
Get out while the getting's good. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Leave them wanting more.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Chris, you got another question for Coach Lloyd Carter?
Yes. My next question for Coach Carter is, were there ever any lacrosse coaches that you looked up to that you learned from?
Oh man, that's an excellent question, man. My first coach was Dave Mincer. He's a white gentleman. He had red hair. We used to call him Opie. That was our nickname for him. And Andy Griffin. Yeah, we used to call him Opie. that was my freshman 10th grade year. I played for him. My 11th grade year, I played for a coach named Obie Barnes. Obie Barnes was probably one of the first blacks to coach high school lacrosse, probably in the country. I might be wrong, but I'm sure I'm not. And I played for him in my junior year. Then my senior year, Coach Mincer took over varsity, and he really exposed us to the game. I never forget, he took us to a clinic. Me and my best friend is Calvin Slay, who was a phenomenal mm-hmm. lacrosse player. I always said if I could be as good as Calvin, I would be good. That was always my goal. But he took our team to the University of Maryland. They gave a clinic, and we watched them teach us how to play the game. And this was in the mid-70s. And so when we saw how they played the game, it changed how we played the game, because we were really just trying to be athletic and run. But they showed us the beauty of stick work. And so mm-hmm. we just changed. Our whole persona changed. When we came back, we were white guys. You know, we dressed preppy, and our whole mentality changed. And it was so interesting, and our team was so much better. And then when we went to Morgan, we brought that to Morgan. They used to call mm-hmm. us pretty boys. When we we used to wear white cleats. Yeah, we used to wear white cleats and white socks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we used to polish our shoes polish our cleats.
Really?
Before the game. Yeah, we had to go running on the field in mud. That's how much we were into that pretty boy image. And, you know, that was back when Ali was prominent and I'm pretty and all of that. So all of that rubbed off on us. And so it rubbed off on us in the sport of lacrosse. Exactly.
You play good. You play better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then the last coach I would add would be Coach Sheldon Freed. That was my coach at Morgan State. He was the one that actually mm-hmm. recruited me to come to Morgan. In my last high school mm-hmm. game, he saw me play. I played an excellent game. He came on the bus and gave me paperwork. And I ended up talking to my parents. Because I was supposed to go to George Washington on an academic scholarship. And mm-hmm. I had to talk my father into letting me go to Morgan to play lacrosse. And Sheldon Freed, He saw something in me that I didn't see, and he developed my game, and he was a no-nonsense coach, but he taught me the game till by the time they cut the program at Morgan, I was probably one of the best players in the country.
Wow.
So, yeah, that would be my coaching lineage. Yes, sir. That's an excellent question.
Wow, it is. So we want to take a little small break real quick. I want everybody to stand by, and we'll be right back in 2 and 2.
I'm going to test this out and click on the app. Now keep in mind that I'm an artist, and I'm sensitive about my shit. So y'all get nice about it. All right. Sisters, how y'all feel? Brothers, y'all all right? See how y'all groove too. I'm getting tired of your shit. You don't dare
Michael Roy. And again, I'd like to thank my listeners from north to south and east to west and everyone in those 42 countries around the globe. You know, we got a special show here tonight with Professor Coach Lloyd Carter, who is, instrumental in the blacks in lacrosse. And I'm going to get back to one of my questions. Now, when you first started teaching the young men about playing lacrosse, and who gave you that start? I mean, how did you go from just hanging out, you and your buddies, playing, for someone to say, you're going to be in charge of this group of men?
Like I said, I've been blessed with a lot of opportunities in life, and I spent several years in the military, So being in the military, I gravitated to leadership positions. I ended up going to officer candidate school, did very well in there, graduated with honors from that. And so that whole military structure of training and building young men, I just gravitated well to that whole concept. So when I got the opportunity to coach high school at Northwestern, I think my first year coaching was in 99, I took that knowledge and applied it to how I coached, and it seemed to work very well. The whole concept of just discipline, self-discipline, discipline. Oh, I'll tell you this story. This is funny. So, like I said, you went to Northwestern. You're familiar with Park Heights. So my first practice, this is what I would say. I would introduce myself. I say, I'm Coach Lloyd Carter. you can call me Coach or you can call me Coach Carter. I said, and this is, I have one strong rule in the beginning. There will be no cursing. I said, I won't curse at you. You definitely won't curse at me, and I don't want y'all cursing on my if you're on my team. And I said, if you do curse, it'll cost you 25 push-ups. And so either by the end of the season, you'll have a well-developed vocabulary, or your chest will look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it's your decision. So look, so this is what would happen. Early on, it'd be MF, this, this, and then I'd be like, that's 25. And then after a while, you don't hear the cursing, but every now and then somebody would slip up, and then one of their boys would say, yo, man, that's 25, yo. Then after a while, when they had the cussing, and every now and then somebody would slip up, and they'd just get right down and just do 25. And so what that did, that was the discipline. And because, you know, like you know, growing up in Park Heights, I mean, that's cursing, that's your second language. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Every other word is MF this. Come on, that's how they talk. But that aspect of coaching and developing young men, I really look back on that and say that was just something that I always kind of bring up to this day.
I like what you said, though. You said that, you know, by the end of the season, you're going to either have a better language or you're going to be, you know, physically in a better position.
Right.
You know, and that's good because you could have said you're off the team, but you would have been hurting yourself and taking away some potential good guys who could do the sport. So I like that. You know, your vocabulary is going to be better or you're going to be buffed up, and that works. And it's funny that when people slip up, the other, you know, members of the team, you didn't have to open it up. They'll say,
yeah,
25. They'll say, yeah, they
yeah, that's 25, yo.
Yeah.
I just laughed. That's 25, yo. I'm sorry, Coach. This is amazing, too, to this day. This is amazing to this day. I'll see my players, and we'll go to certain events that, you know, we sponsor Black Max, and they'll be there, and they'll have their sons there, you know, and they'll be there in the game, and they'll be talking, and, you know, they'll be talking like men, but as soon as I come around, if they cuss, the first thing they look at me, I'm sorry, Coach, they don't do no push-ups, though, but they'll apologize. And then most of them really won't curse around me, and that's amazing how you know that influence that I had. Yeah,
that respect it has for you. Yeah,
right.
The next time one of them slip with you also wear this point at them, 25, yo. Yes, you're joking.
25, yo. I got one more tidbit I want to add, if it's okay, when it comes to that. So I would save this, like, if we were in a game, so, like, we're in a championship game, and you know, we're doing the best we can, or we're doing, and I want to get a little bit extra out of them, and I would always save it for, like, one time in the season. And then, you know, I was like, you know, we'd be in a timeout or whatever, and I would get down, and I'd knock out 25 push-ups. And they would look at me like, why are you doing that? And then I would go in on them, like, you know, y'all playing like a bunch of boop, 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 boop. And they would look at me like, oh, wow. And look, next thing you know, we win the championship.
Okay.
But I would always save that one for that one point in the season where I really need to cut through, get through to them, and I would always do that. So that's funny.
That's good. You know, because, you know, I remember at the fire department when we was working there, you were small, but after time went by, you got all swollen up yourself, your neck, everything. I said, damn! I mean, what you doing? So I guess the push-ups were helping for you as well.
a lot of that came through the military, you know, being in the military, being in, Yeah, that's where a lot of my physical fitness came to.
Well, like they say, an army do a body good, just like Milton does.
Yes, so it does.
Yeah, but Chris got another question for you, darling.
Yes, my next question for you, Coach Carter, is is there anything that you're looking forward to with your team this season? Like, are there any trophies, any awards, anything like that?
So just to give you a quick update to where I am now in my coaching. So I retired from Hampton in 2019.
Okay.
I had been coaching 20 years straight, high school, college. In between that, I had started Morgan's club team in 2005. So, and then when I came down in 2011, started Hampton's club team, we went Division One in 2016. I retired in 2019. I just took a break. I just needed a break.
Right.
And then recently, they started this next collegiate level league where they went to these HBCUs and they started this format of lacrosse called Sixes. It looks like basketball. It's 5-on-5 with a goalie. It's just like basketball. They go up and down. The field is a lot shorter. The rules have changed. They got a shot clock. And so this the next level sports entertainment cable channel sponsors this league. And what they did is they selected HBCUs like Delaware State, Lincoln, Morgan, University of Maryland, Eastern Shore, Coppin, and then Norfolk State. So last year I helped Norfolk State. I came on as an assistant coach. And then this year they made me the head coach. So this is the first year I'll be the head coach, and this league is only like 3 years old. So I'm looking forward to going in, and hopefully we'll be successful. We'll win some games, and I would love to win the championship. But this is ironic. The first year, Delaware State won the championship. Last year, Morgan State won the championship. And what's so ironic is that's the club team that I started back in 2005. They ended up winning the championship. So I would love to knock them off. That would be ultimate. That's a great question. Yeah. So that's my goal. Don't tell nobody.
Okay.
Nobody.
Everybody. Yeah. I'm hearing a sound like somebody. I don't know what that noise is, but I'm so glad that you had the opportunity to be here tonight with us. And when you do your thing again, you go out there with your team, you know, you're always welcome to come back and give us some updates on what's going on with you. So we appreciate the time you took on this Friday evening to hang out with me and Chris. And we're going to wrap it up. And I just can't say thank you enough, darling. You know, and keep in touch.
I can't thank you enough.
Yes, this is awesome.
How much time you got left? You got like a minute?
I got 5 minutes left.
I need to tell people about the Ty Lyles that I know and how she changed my life. We met we were both in the CETA program. We was talking about this before the show started. CETA program was a federal government program. Came into the inner city and says, we're going to teach you folks a skill that is going to benefit you and benefit your family and benefit the citizens. So we went to paramedic school. And I lived in West Baltimore, and our courses was all the way in the other side of Baltimore, East Baltimore. I didn't have a car. I used to have to catch a bus, like an hour and a half bus ride to school. And so because of that, I used to be late. I had a couple latenesses. And if you got so many latenesses, they would kick you out of the program. So I'm a 20-year-old young man, trying to change my life, and they were about to kick me out the program. And these people in my class, we had just really met each other. And Tay said, you know what? She lived close. You can stay here, and I'll take you to school every morning. And that saved my job. That saved my job. And I eventually, this is how God works. I eventually ended up being the chief of the emergency medical services for Baltimore City. And mm-hmm. and the reason when I think about Terry Lyle, she saved me. Because I would have got fired. But she didn't know me from Adam. She said, no, man, I got you. Stay here, and I'll take you to. And that's why I love you to this day. I love you to this day, sis.
I love you from the ground of God, you know, and like you said, that was God, too, because God tendered my heart, because I'm not the strange man staying in the house with me and my daughter. But, you know, when God talks to you, it's like telepathy. You listen, and I'm so grateful that I was instrumental in helping you, because you make me so proud of your accomplishment. You know, it's like, oh, I gave birth to my little brother.
Exactly.
I'm so proud
of you. Exactly, my big sis. That's
right.
I had to share that. I had to.
Well, thank you, darling.
Yeah, great
but
story.
You know, you know, it's just, you know, when people try to do right and be kind, you know, God will take you a further way down that road, and God has blessed you and continually is blessing you and blessing me as well. You know, so I just want people to know, if you
yeah,
don't know
me
God,
too.
Have a relationship with him, you know, talk to him, you know. He can fix it, whatever you're going through.
Exactly.
We've been through a lot.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
And on that note, darling, I want to thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Anything you got going on, call me. I can put you on the show because this is my show. I can do what I want to do, you know.
Exactly.
Yes,
you're the boss.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got
anything you.
You
want to talk about, me and Chris will make it happen. So I love you.
Yes.
I know it's cold in Baltimore. Bundled up, stay warm,
yeah.
You know, and condolences to your friend that you're going to their services. I'm so sorry that you got to be there for that. But, you know, you take care of yourself and you get back home safely when it's all over.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity. God bless y'all.
Thank you.
God bless
take
you. Thank
now.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Peace.
Peace.